Welcome, everyone. It's great to have you with us, and this is Dr. Will Tuttle. We are just now beginning our World Peace Diet Circle call for April 18th, 2019, and this is for people who are World Peace Diet facilitators who have gone through the training or who are going through the training or are part of the World Peace Diet Circle. And it's wonderful, I think, to have this kind of safe space for us to ask questions, share ideas, thoughts, and feelings, and inspirations, and concerns, and to talk about the progress that we're making and also the obstacles that come up to the progress that we're working on here for this human lifetime that we have on this beautiful planet. We each have a lifetime. We each have a certain amount of time. It's our most precious resource, I think, to devote to what we feel is important. So I'm very honored and grateful that you feel that your time is being well spent here with us on this World Peace Diet Circle call. Yay. So thank you all again for the efforts that you're making to help raise awareness, the creativity, the inspiration, the perspiration. Well, I think it was my father always used to quote, I think it was either Edison or Ford or one of those guys who said that genius is 1% inspiration and 99% perspiration. I think it was Edison. So I think there's a lot of truth to that. Really, quite honestly, I think the big thing is to keep plugging away. And sometimes it's helpful to have some support. Very often we don't find that much support from our friends and family members for the work we're doing in veganism. Sometimes we do. And in many cases we don't, really, because people, if they're still eating animal foods, of course, feel somewhat threatened, perhaps, by what we're working on, which can be discouraging for lots of people. But I think the good news is that as veganism continues to spread and unfold and the movement matures, that we're finding that it's getting, I think, somewhat easier for us to find avenues and pathways to reach people and to get into the mainstream consciousness, because the more perforated the whole block of human consciousness becomes, the more little tubes there are, we can extend the little feelers of our compassion in there and actually hit a nerve and awaken people. I think, you know, it seems to me like back in the 80s when I was just first getting into this, and even the 70s, it was like this big amorphous bolt, you know, granite stone, and every time you tried to poke into it with a little tendril of the vegan message, it would just get, you know, you wouldn't go anywhere. It would get kind of turned away or crushed or something. So I think people have been chipping away and making little caves and tunnels, and now we're finding that whole stone is getting honeycombed with our little tunnels, and at one point it's all going to just suddenly, I think, very much more quickly begin to get even easier. It's just an accelerating process. So I think that's the good news. I think, on the other hand, the situation on the planet seems to be in some ways deteriorating in terms of environmental devastation on many fronts, as well as the political situation, the military situation, and the economic situation. So with nuclear weapons and with the capacities that we have for violence against each other and against our planet, the big question, I think, looming, of course, is whether we can turn the ship around before we hit the iceberg. And that's, I guess, why we're here, to talk about and feel into the ways that we can contribute to the movement of raising awareness in our society, and also how we ourselves can thrive in this lifetime that we have, this precious human birth, as vegans and as vegan advocates and activists, and as people who are trying as best we can to embody ahimsa or nonviolence in our daily lives. So we have a great opportunity, I think, today and really every day to discover something new and to make more progress on the adventure of our human lives. Remember that great book by Christmas Humphreys on, he was one of the first to bring Buddhism to the West, and the saying that the journey of 1,000 miles begins with a single step. So I think if you're on this call, you've already taken that first step, which is great. And every day to keep stepping, to keep stepping onward and to keep doing the best we can to contribute to the progress that we're making and that our society is making. So as I said in a couple of the emails I sent out, we have a wonderful special guest joining us in the beginning, Patricia Todd. Before we invite her on, I'd like to take a minute and just have a short meditation time. It's one of our traditions here, probably one of the only real traditions, but traditions aren't all bad, I don't think. And so let's just take a few minutes wherever you happen to be and breathe together. Wherever we are, we may be separated by miles, or in the case of people who are listening to this recording, we'll be also separated by time as well, and people listening later, but here we are together in any event in consciousness, and consciousness is eternal and omnipresent, so here we are, right in the same space, with our intention, with our awareness. We're in the space of love, the space of kindness and compassion, space of awareness, space of healing and awakening and transformation. So let's take a moment and let go of whatever may be bothering us at the moment, just for a moment, or whatever it took to get here to this call. You know, we all had things we had to do to open up the space and time for this. So we'll just let go of all that and just be present and give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to shine light on the underlying situation in our society and shine the light of joy and freedom and peace and healing into our own hearts and minds, into our movement, into the world, to contribute in our own way to shining this light as best we can, to be vehicles of the light of truth. So we give thanks to everyone who is doing this, wherever they may be. Thank all our brothers and sisters who are on the path of sharing the vegan message in their own ways, knowing that there's many ways to shine this truth and many paths to the top of the mountain. We all have our own unique perspectives, and we can honor those of others. And we give thanks for those who have gone before us and those who are coming after us, and that we're part of the great awakening of human consciousness that's happening during these critical times on planet Earth. We don't know how it will all turn out. It's an ongoing discovery. Give thanks to all the beautiful animals, beings we refer to as animals, who share this earth with us. We send them our love, and we send them our apologies. We send them our gratitude for their beautiful example of continuing to do their best to live and thrive and to celebrate their lives, even in the polluted air and the polluted water and the habitat being destroyed, they still carry on as best they can. Wounded, very often sick, but doing the best they can to teach us and show us way toward a more harmonious world. We give our thanks, knowing that all the ripples that radiate out into the world from our being together here on this call will be ripples to bring healing and peace and justice and freedom and abundance into our world. And we give thanks that as we go forth into our lives afterward, we'll continue to awaken every day and to continue to learn and to grow and to find our unique calling, our unique contribution that we can make to the healing of our world. It's an open-ended adventure. There's no way to compare any flower to any other flower. They're all unique. They're all beautiful in their way. We're all flowers in the same infinite garden. And we're called here to this earth at this time. We have a calling. May we honor the calling as best we can. And we give thanks, knowing this is so and so it is. Okay. Well, there's so many wonderful things that are happening and that have been happening. And, of course, I guess there's always lots of disturbing things that are happening as well. We can focus on both. And I'd like to go ahead and just jump into our time that we have at the beginning here with Patricia Todd. She's a dear heart, a wonderful person that we've known for quite a few years, and who's been working diligently and persevering in a very somewhat quiet way, but I think just enriching the soil of the garden where she lives in Southern California in a variety of ways. And she's gone through the World Peace Diet training, I think, several years ago, and started a weekly gathering. And it's been going on now, I believe, for about 3 years. You know, pretty much every week gathering, and Patricia coordinates it. And so I'll just let Patricia tell us a little bit more about the gathering, because I think it's better if it's in her words. But I find it to be just very inspiring and a wonderful way to help bring the message in a grassroots way of compassion to animals. And she also has a background in more in human justice, human rights work as well, that I think is so important that we have a big view of animal liberation and human liberation, how they're interconnected. So, Patricia, I'm going to go ahead and unmute your phone and invite you to join us here, and here we go. So,
okay. Hi. Thank you, Will. You can hear me now?
Yes. Everyone
okay, wonderful. So yes. I guess I'd maybe like to start with a saying that I had heard, which is, do what you can, start where you are. So that's had something to do with my plans. And and just a very brief intro. I read your book, The World Peace Diet, in 2010, and then I decided to go hear you speak in Ladera Ranch, Orange County, California. And then I talked to Madeline. I said, Madeline, would it be worth it for me to actually go to Ohio to the World Peace Diet training and at the World Peace and Yoga Jubilee? And she convinced me. Long story short, she convinced me to go, and I'm so glad I did.
Right.
So. Yeah, and so that was 2010, and one thing I remember you said is to really try and identify what your gift is to offer. So, you know, I wrestled with that in my head, and I thought, well, I have a background in social work, predominantly working with family planning, reproductive issues, women's rights, immigrants' rights, and then I became a librarian, Spanish services, and reference librarian, and in the course of my work, I've done some pretty serious facilitating with controversial topics. So I thought, well, I can facilitate. So I got in my little brain there, maybe do a vegan education and support group. And one night I really sat at the computer and trying to find a title for the group, and all the vegan names were taken, but I was able to come up with Veg Help 101.
Right.
So that's kind of how it started. And I have been volunteering at the local San Gabriel Valley Humane Society shelter as a dog walker and other things since the summer of 2011. And so I thought that might be a good tie-in. And after, you know, getting to know the people more and building up, diplomatically building up our relations, we became community partners. And at the time, somebody that was very active in the shelter was the head of a local place called California Mission Inn, which is actually an assisted living facility. And since she was the head of that, she said, I have a place where you can do your group. So that's where we've been meeting, which is just around the corner from the shelter. It's actually in Rosemead, but right next to San Gabriel. And we became community partners, the shelter and Veg Help 101. So the philosophy behind Veg Help 101 is, you know, very straightforward. Help people go vegan and stay vegan. And
right.
most of what our discussions are about is sort of how you can go vegan, because we do see people along the spectrum. We have several people that go that are not yet vegan, some people that are just recently vegan, and some very seasoned vegans. So we talk about the hows about it, how you go into it, what, you know, people have nutrition questions, how do I talk to my family, you know, my coworkers, things like that. And then we talk about why, which I feel is my specialty, which is a part I really love to dig into.
Right.
And I think you all know why. I would say about half of the time we actually talk about something from Will Tuttle, because I think those are sort of the juiciest topics. They get right into it. There goes something. We'll go into the topics in just a moment. The first Wednesday of the month, we have a vegan potluck. And the last Wednesday of the month, we have a movie. The other days, I've prepared some kind of topic. And also, another thing that our group does is occasionally we go to animal rescues together. And that's great because it just has to. It deepens our connection wherever we are on the spectrum. We're planning a trip to Deer Park Monastery in Escondido, which is one of Thich Nhat Hanh's organizations, to work on our mindfulness. A lot of us go out hiking together. We go to movies. We eat out together. We go to a meditation in the mountains. So it's also very good for us in terms of doing other things together.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And also I have found that, it's just me, myself, Patricia Todd. I'm not a nonprofit organization or in a business. I'm just a person offering a service, which I call Veg Help 101. Okay, but I found it's really good in terms of giving me it legitimizes me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I have a business card, and it's just a business card works wonders. You know, and a website and a Facebook page, and mm-hmm. I also find it gives me a good platform and springboard and a way to get out in the community. You know, who are you? What do you do? And so I can be very as clear as possible with my handouts and business cards, as opposed to just being, you know, my name's Patricia Todd and I believe in veganism. You know, there's something kind of to go on because people like to hold on to a little something. So some of our topics, and we really have met every week actually for 4 years, so we've had a bunch of different topics, but I just wrote down a few of them. Intersectionality. We reviewed numerous chapters by Joel Fuhrman in his book, Fast Food Genocide, which kind of ties mm-hmm. into intersectionality, if you've read that.
Yeah.
We've talked about speciesism, nasal breathing, and I learned that through my yoga class that I took through a place called Nutrition Science. And, Will, you met the head of that, John Tanner. He
right.
puts on monthly talks about what happened to him when he had a heart attack. And he's not vegan, he calls it the ideal diet, and it's like super whole food plant-based diet. So we're informally community partners. And I learned that nasal breathing technique through one of their yoga classes that they offer. And then we've talked about food addiction from Chef AJ. I try and have any of the you know, quote-unquote members, informally members, if they have something that they have a strength in, they want to present. So we had Dan present on water and water filters. That's his business. And we compared several different types. Yernea, who lives in Pasadena, they were going to have a city meeting about the coyotes because more of them are coming down from the mountains. And so she presented on that, which was, you know, really interesting. For example, I thought relocating them would be a good idea, but apparently it isn't. And so she talked about why. And just by the way, Pasadena has a very friendly, respectful of coyotes policy. So that was good. Yes. So those are just some examples of topics. And, for example, in our movie night, we've seen The Invisible Vegan, Diet Fiction, Forks Over Knives for the Beginners, the movie Eating You Alive, and What the Health. So those are just, you know, some examples. And at VegHelp 101, I feel it's a really safe place. We've had, you know, some people that are very new saying they just have challenges opening their heart. They just still aren't feeling it. And so at our last meeting, I shared about 16 minutes, Will, of a talk that you recently did with Live Vegan. And it,
right.
The part was you gave some examples of what you do when you meditate, of how to sort of deepen your empathy for others, be it non-human animals or especially humans even. So we talked about that. And, you know, it is a vegan education and support group. So, you know, sometimes there are tears. When they're like those of us who are a little bit more seasoned, if you will, I think we've all talked about challenges where it is very painful for those around us that still don't embrace it. You know, we can just kind of share some of those feelings about it. So, let me see here. Yeah, and sharing ideas and suggestions. Let's see here. Oh, sometimes some of the challenges can be people have really developed really strong feelings of long-term vegans about how to be the best advocate, you know, if you do it a step-by-step way as opposed to abolitionist vegan. So sometimes people... that's a little bit challenging for me because personally, I lean towards an abolitionist position. I don't feel angry at those who aren't, you know, or because I know I still have a long way to go. And to me, anybody that makes any step towards it, I salute them. But anyway, that's kind of a delicate issue. And another thing that's really nice about it is you can build goodwill with other organizations. And I had shared with you, Will, that there's a new eatery located just a few miles away from where we have our meeting in South El Monte. And it's inside where people wait to have their car washed. So it's at a car wash. And it's these Latinos. They make a vegan, mostly Mexican food. And, you know, we've kind of hooked up together, and they asked me if I had some literature to bring over, and I did. They got back to me. They said people are reading it. Some take it home. So that's a great connection. And we often find people who come to our group that are Mexican or anywhere in, you know, Latin America that they feel it's especially hard, given their traditions and culture, to go vegan. So I'm just really excited about that restaurant. They hope to get more kind of situated there, and they'd like me to speak there and have, you know, other people come and speak. Also, I completed a 1-year program, weight loss program at Tanner Care, which is not too far. It's in Monrovia. It's to help people move into a whole food plant-based diet because I found myself being, you know, significantly overweight. So, you know, I completed it. I was able to, you know, really lower my lab numbers and my BMI, my body mass index. So I had success on the program. And so they'd like me to come back once in a while and just, you know, talk about it. And I just gave a brief thing, and essentially what I told people was, I stay on the path. You know, if you stay on the path, it will happen on what they recommend for eating. And so, you know, I was so excited because one person said the reason she and her husband and a brother and their wife, four of them came, they just came to the first meeting, which you can come to see if you like it or not. And they were about to give up. They're going, this isn't for us. But after hearing me talk so highly about it, they stayed. You know, so that was wonderful. And also, you know, and also I can share. So, you know, I really work on being a level-headed vegan, you know, because I'm so cognizant of this stereotype of us being pushy and, you know, annoying. So I really try and work on that on myself. And I guess sometimes it's actually successful. what else? I did want to share, for example, what it was like last night. We had 8 people attending, just a total mixture of people from different spectrums. So, you know, people really need that support. I hear it over and over. I don't have anyone in my life I can talk to this about. Nobody understands it, and it helps them keep up. Some people come just so they can share what they've learned with others. We had a young man, a Chinese gentleman, come, and he happened to have come a couple of weeks ago when we were talking about, your book, Buddhism and Veganism. I had just read the 3 chapters that you wrote, and he goes, oh, this is great. He says, I'm exactly interested in this topic, and it turned out he is Buddhist. And his story, just so briefly, was several years ago he was increasingly suffering from asthma to the point that he caved in and went to the hospital because he said, I hate hospitals. I don't want to go there. His viewpoint was you go to a hospital and you're going to die. He just was so against it, but he did. And anyway, they helped him get through it with whatever. They helped him get through the night, you know. But then he started researching more, and he went whole food plant-based diet, and he got completely better. So it was also just a wonderful testimony, you know. Because I hear about it, I read about it, but this is a person that, you know, came to us that lived it and is now free from asthma. And he was on the brink of dying. I mean, he gave us quite the testimony.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, and also he listens to somebody called Dr. Siu, S-I-U, and his son, apparently, they do talks, and the fellow who came to our meeting 2 weeks ago on the Buddhism and veganism, he checked out some one of your videos, and he was really impressed, and he says it goes along very much with this Dr. Siu says. So anyway, that's just an example. You know, and he came back. That was great. Some other challenges that kind of pop up are the issue of weight. One night I was at our meeting, about, again, 7 or 8 people, I looked around, and at least 3/4 were significantly overweight in the group. So, you know, there's this issue of, what do they call it, weight shaming, diet shaming, fat shaming, that's what they call it, right? And I don't want to be guilty of that at all. So I just try and let people know about the John Tanner Whole Food Plant-Based program that they have, and if anybody's interested. And, of course, at the same time, we're there predominantly for the animals, you know, and also, let people know, you know, if you're transitioning, you know, those transition foods are good, but maybe to start weaning yourself off and crowding them out a little bit with whole food plant-based. But that's a little bit of a challenging issue. Sometimes it's also a little politics I have to be a little bit careful of because, you know, I personally am progressive, but I don't want to turn off anybody who's, you know, whatever, very even right or whatever. Yeah. And one time we were reading your article, Materialism and Vegans as Healers, and somebody from the receptionist came in. He had to get something from the room, and we were just at a part where it was borderline talking about communism, let's put it that way. And I have to be, or socialism. I was hoping he wouldn't go away and say, hey, there are, you know, a bunch of, they're talking about socialism up there. So, anyway, that can sometimes be a little bit challenging, but I find one way to get around that is just to stick with the word materialism and leave politics out as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did want to just, that's mostly what I have to say, but 2 years ago you had invited me to speak on this on the call-in. And at that time, I was really hoping to do a fundraiser for the San Gabriel Valley Humane Society.
Right.
I had been really kind of cultivating contacts and people in Hollywood and, you know, that might let us use their house. But what happened was, while we had Doreen Hudson, she had just come in as the board president of the San Gabriel Valley Humane Society. She was totally open to it, so was another one of the board members. But it was Judy, who wrote that book? One of your friends?
Judy Carman.
Judy, yeah, Carman, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, Judy beings. Carman.
Peace
to all beings, yes. She had mentioned Animal Place in Northern California, a rescue, and that they have something called Food for Thought, which is they put out a shelter card. And I was so excited about that. I've got all these glossy packets and put it as concisely as possible. And to give, so there was a San Gabriel Valley Humane Society board meeting. This was a little over a year ago. It was immediately voted down 3-2, and I'm not at liberty to say more about what happened. I have a little inside information.
Just to tell everybody what you mean. So, but you mean what the Animal Place, what they were doing was they were saying basically literature and a resolution essentially that any place that was a sanctuary for animals, that they should, it should be vegan.
Doing fundraising and they had food, they would have vegan. If you're doing something for the volunteers.
Right.
Right. And I don't even think they hardly do any of that. It would have hardly meant not very much at all to them. And Doreen, she was all for it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there was, I'll just leave it with this, there was vehement, almost vitriolic objection to it. And I will say this, because I know who, I don't know them, but it was two vets. And the person who's now back in as the president of the board. So the problem that I ran into was the power structure there. Even though, you know, two out of five ain't bad. It's a fairly good start. So by one vote, we lost. So I decided not to go ahead with the fundraising for the shelter. And part of, you know, I felt I could help them out through VegHelp 101 to raise money, and they could help us out if we could have our group on site there to make the connections more. So I was very bummed out about that. But Doreen also assured me, look, it has helped a lot, and it still makes impact on a lot of people. So I just wanted to follow up on that because I had shared that at our call a couple of years ago.
A couple of years ago we talked, I think, is that right? Yeah, I remember there was a whole hope. There was hope that the Humane Society would be a good way to bring the vegan message, and at least that they would have all their things be vegan, whatever they did, and so forth. Yeah. But then it didn't work.
It didn't work, and unfortunately, I looked at them today. I'm sure about it, but they have an F. Their grade is F.
No, really.
You know. So, yep.
Yeah.
They're just not there yet. I would say about a third of the volunteers that I mentor for dog walking are either vegetarian, vegan, or interested. So there is interest there. You know. So I haven't completely given up.
Right. Wow. If anyone would like to ask a question or make a comment, press *6 on your phone.
Okay, let me take a look at my phone. Yeah, it's handheld. Let me see. *6. Okay, I see it.
Yeah,
okay.
But you're all on me. But if anybody else who's listening in wants to ask you a question, they can press *6 and then I can.
Oh, I see.
It,
okay.
And then I can.
Oh, so I don't need to do that.
You don't. No, you're set. You're good.
Okay.
But anybody else? It can press *6 if they'd like to say something. But I just wanted to really, first of all, just thank you for just going right ahead and filling us in on what you've been doing the last four years since VegHelp 101 has been going. Would you say then basically you haven't hardly missed any weeks in the whole 4 years that you've gathered?
Have missed maybe one a year, but Yernay has taken over for me. But there have always been, you know, rain or shine or Christmas Eve or whatever, we're there on a Wednesday.
You're there on a Wednesday no matter what, and you're supporting each other and talking about ideas. And so one is a potluck, one is a movie, and the other two you kind of put together a program of discussion. Because I know I've started, I guess about, I don't know what it was, a few months ago, getting your weekly that you send out to your group. And it's always very interesting, I have to say, that you really put together a discussion topic with ideas. We can talk about this. Mm-hmm. And So you've probably reached quite a few people over the years, I would think. You know, if you have 7 or 8, several hundred people, and to be able to provide that kind of a consistent opportunity for people. They know that they can come if they want, and I'm sure you have regulars and the people that come and go and then come again and then you never see them again, and then then they show up again. But I know
we have two new people now, so you know it's just people come and they go and some stick around.
Right.
But that's what it's
right.
exactly meant for. It's not like I want you to be a member for life. It's just how if it's you, it's either one if it's useful for you in any way at any part of your. In your time in this vegan path, or if you feel you like want to share what your wisdom, your experience with new people.
Right, and you've kept it completely non monetary, right? I mean, this
right, called, right.
This,
sometimes, okay. I brought a basket for chipping in for a while, and I gave that to the shelter, the San Gabriel Valley Humane Society. Mm. I'm thinking of starting it again, but I think. Really, I don't know if I want to do that because people are kind of hard up for money, I'm finding. Maybe I'm over worried about that, but I thought it might be nice, you know, to give to an animal rescue because there are several around here, man. There are like 4 or 5 wonderful ones.
Right.
So I might do that again, but only donation. I don't know. I'm retired. I'm doing okay. There's not much expense involved in it, minimal.
Right, since they're donating the space for you.
Donating the space, and it's just, you know, sometimes I need to pay for pamphlets and such. But I usually give somebody, I have a basket with a little gift when they come for the first time. So, you know, that involves shelling out a little money. But, you know, one of my friends had once told me who was had a major in business, if you want to ask something of people, give them something.
Great. Well, I just love to hear everything you're saying myself. It just seems so beautiful. You've got a like a sacred space basically on Wednesdays where people can feel free to cry or exult or whatever it is. They know it's emotionally it can be absolutely devastating to go vegan and then have family conflicts and have I've noticed that you have quite a bit of discussion about not only being vegan, but being a healthy vegan. Mm-hmm. And I think that's so important today because people that really want to be effective advocates, if we don't, you know, if we're not healthy, if we don't look healthy, that's like already we've got 2 strikes against us. We're talking to people about going vegan. They're looking, they're saying, well, why do I want to do that? I don't want to look like you.
That was part of my motivation personally. You know, if I'm any kind of vegan, quote unquote, leader, where, you know, I mean, if I'm going to, you know, I don't know how to describe it, but if I'm going to get out there and try and share the vegan message with people, like you say, if they're looking at me, they, you know, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you
it
want
is.
To walk,
it's kind of
walk,
a, it
walk.
Is. It's a tricky thing, you know, because we are the face of the movement, in a sense. We are the face for the animals. And you know, maybe we only care about the animals. Maybe we don't care about our health that much. We're not doing it. But if we really, I think, want to be effective, we have to take that into account in some way. There's some people who say, you know, you should really change how you dress and change how you look. And, you know, if you, like, you know, like I should always wear a suit and tie if I'm going in. And personally, I just don't like to, I don't do it because I'm just not myself then, so I guess we have to all draw the line where we do. But to at least, to have that, at least that conscious awareness. Plus the basic truth that when we're taking care of our health, and like you say, eating a whole food plant-based diet is not the same as just being vegan. Mm-hmm. And when we're eating a whole food plant-based diet as a vegan, you know, having the motivation, and then minimizing the amount of processed foods, which usually do cause problems health-wise. They cause problems to the environment, then makes a much better foundation. I've noticed that over the years. It seems to be something we're getting more and more kind of adamant about for ourselves, you know, that this is it, you know, we're not going to buy that stuff anymore. We'll maybe try a little vegan cheese now and then, but we're not going to go on eating tons of vegan cheese because, you know, it's just pure fat.
Yeah. I caught myself.
That great to eat, eating it.
Yeah. I caught myself last night when I was in, I have a home in the mountains in Wrightwood, and I went to their farmer's market, and somebody there had, was selling almond, vegan almond brittle. And I bought two little containers of it. And I shared it last night, but then I thought, oh, I'm kind of sharing the wrong message because it's extremely sweet. And, you know, I mean, yes, it has almonds in it, but other than that, I didn't even look at the sugar content. So I caught myself because one of the traps that I fell into was I can eat anything as long as it's vegan. So I learned my lesson the hard way. But even then, I'm making, even just after last night, I'm going to make a more conscious effort to bring in for our potluck. Like I recently learned how to make a Buddha bowl. And let me get rid of that. You know, with sweet potatoes and quinoa and black beans and kale, and then with the green goddess dressing, you know, with cashews and cilantro and pepper, I think, you know, all healthy.
Right.
So I'm going to try and make more of an effort to make whole food plant-based, delicious, easy enough to make food recipes. And then, of course, Madeline's intuitive cooking sheet.
I think Madeline's right. All her stuff is healthy and pretty much from scratch. But it's good to, as you're doing, providing resources for people.
Mm-hmm.
That's so great. Well, let's see. We do have actually someone raise their hand to say something. I'll go ahead and unmute. This is Lily. Okay. Yes. Hello.
Hi. Hi, Will. Hi, Patricia.
Hi, Lily.
Oh, you're beautiful, Patricia. You make me want to cry because last week...
Oh,
yeah, I do. Have you ever come?
I think I've come to a few of them, yes.
Uh-huh. Yes, well, maybe I've talked to you, but it came to my attention through, you know, a fellow vegan. I have a vegan network that I deal with, and it came to my attention that there are people that are literally ripping off other vegans and charging incredible amounts of money for nothing, you know. And I'm just hearing you speak about how you're doing what you're doing, and it's just beautiful what you're doing. If I were down in Southern California, believe me, I'd be right there with you doing it with you. Just the fact that that you don't charge for it, that you give it's a freely given gift to the community, and it's really a wonderful thing that you're doing this, because I'm telling you, even at times when I've had people say to me, oh, well, that's just a moneymaker, you know, that's vegans ripping off vegans, and they're out there. They're out there. One of my friends recently was kind of scammed by a so-called reputable vegan, but it was not good. And just to hear you, it's so refreshing. It's so beautiful that you're doing this just from the heart.
You.
That's why
enough.
I never charged anything for World Peace Diet Sunday. You know, I did it for 4.5 years. I'm planning to go back to it. And of course, for me, the World Peace Diet is the reason I'm vegan. So I'm just totally committed to that book, to Dr. Tuttle and Madeline. I mean, that's where my life, it was totally transformed over 12 years ago, and the book had only been out a year, and I was fortunate enough to read it, and I tell everybody about it. It's very hard for me to be an activist out here because there's nobody here where I live. But whenever I'm on the phone, I always give out the message. Whenever, you know, I don't use an internet, and I give out the message about the World Peace Diet. For me, that's just the best way to give vegan information, because if they go anywhere near Will's website or anywhere near the book and start reading it, they're going to get all the answers they need about why to be vegan. And the how-to is, you know, you learn how to, and once you're there, you know how, you know, you learn how to. But thank you so much for being a counterbalance to what I heard last week. I really needed to hear that, and it was very good, and I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lily. Thank you, Patricia.
Thanks, Lily.
That's a
very good point you made, Lily. Thank you. Yeah, it's true. There is that side sometimes of, you know, people marketing things to vegans, to other vegans, in a way that's just, you know, it's in a way it's somewhat understandable in the sense that we're, some people are really desperate and for money and trying, you know, I guess it's, you can justify, well, you know, I'm doing something good here and I'm trying to spread the message, but it's a tricky thing. So I agree. I feel like Lily too. It's wonderful if we can just share this without charging as much as we can to just get the word out there and help people. And but I also see if someone is really providing a service that's valuable mm-hmm. to people, that, you know, they can pay for it, and that's also helpful too. So I don't take a strong stance one way or the other, but I think it's good to be realistic, but it's great. The more we can support, you know, the whole idea in the Buddhist tradition is you supply the teachings without charging. And if people want to make a donation, then that's a possibility, but you don't charge something. So great. All right. Well, thank you. Yeah, thanks, Lily. And if anyone else wants to say something, press star 6. Is there anything else you would like to add to anything at this point? I've really enjoyed, you've said so many things that have really been quite interesting. I feel like I could maybe comment on some of them, but for the most part, what you're doing is sort of a self-standing edifice. You know, you just, every week you bring the message, people come, and it's very creative, it seems to me. You know, you create a topic, and then it's like an improvisation. You never know who's going to show up exactly, and you go with the flow.
It keeps me learning. It keeps me on my toes.
Right,
and, you know, you're
exactly.
talking about creativity, and, you know, I'm really trying to dig into the intuition part, and so I recently got my flute repaired. I have a nice flute. I put down a pretty big chunk of money to have it overhauled, and so I'm thinking, knock on wood, but I'm thinking of doing a creativity night, too, or maybe once every 3 months. Let's just bring your instrument, bring your poetry, let's, you know, that would be kind of, that's kind of challenging for me, but I'm thinking of doing it. You know?
Right. What a great idea. Yeah,
yeah.
Vegans, I think we need more outlets for our creativity, and it's great, you know, whether it's creative food or poetry.
Let it flow.
Singing, music, art, you know, all these things, dance, movement. I think the vegan movement really takes off the more we get creative. Creativity is the key. Using our imagination and creating something new. It's a creative movement. I mean, it's all about creativity. We're creating a whole new story to replace this toxic narrative that's here. And so we need creative people creating videos. And that's what we see happening, you know, creating all kinds of
big time.
Things. And you're doing it. You're creating your Wednesday evening and discussions and the opportunity for people to share their ideas.
I guess I might add that I don't know if this makes sense, but you know, the do what you can, where has to go, wherever you are, right? So it also, I kind of think about the Occupy movement. So an example would be in the Los Angeles area, instead of having to go to a protest at the federal building by UCLA in the west side, you know, the vigils popped up all over the place against the war. So, you know, Afghanistan, Iraq in like 2000, 2001, which was before Occupy. But anyway, just this idea of you don't have to be an expert. Hey, I'm not Noam Chomsky. I haven't written a book on veganism. You know, I'm not a so-called expert. I'm a but I do have certification from Will Tuttle. But I am, you know, in other words, just to trust in myself that I do have something to give rather than holding it back. So it's been kind of a good for my self-esteem as well.
Well, and I really love what you said at the beginning about you just created a name and you made business cards and how that sort of instantly transforms the whole thing from being just a personal thing to being a platform, essentially. You know,
I'm not at risk of being misrepresenting anything. Because I really just say I'm a person who offers a service, a free service. It's true.
I think it's great. Yeah,
I don't think they can get me on anything.
No, I mean.
But you know, in this litigious society, and California is really well known for being litigious, but so far, so good.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Sharing from your heart and creating a space for people to share ideas. And when we came down last, whenever it was, you helped set up a couple of talks, I think, and, you know, just meeting some of the people, go to your Wednesday nights was great. You know, I could really see the impact you're having. So,
yeah.
Fantastic.
And Dan, who you had met, he came to your Palm Springs talk. You know,
yes,
he was
right.
For the health through Gary Knoll. But then he actually listened to your book. He listened to it, and then he bought it. And he's like more and more on board. It's just really strengthening it. He's the outgoing president of a Pasadena community garden, and he invited us, and several of us, a handful of us, like five or six of us, came from Veg Help 101 to their 50-year anniversary party in Pasadena, and and they wanted us to label what our food was. And my partner, who you know, Manuel, he and I, but mostly it was his crazy concoction of noodles and textured soy and some vegetables. And I don't know, it was a crazy, crazy concoction. But we labeled what was in it. And this one woman, who happened to have been African-American, came up to our table and goes, are you the vegans who made that? And I said, well, yeah, between me and Manuel. And she goes, I want the recipe. Anyway, so I sent her the quote-unquote recipe. And she got back to me saying, thank you so much. And she goes, you vegans seem like some fun people. So that made
right.
me very happy because, again, I have to be careful that I don't launch into a diatribe.
Right.
It could happen.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I always remember another thing I learned in Ohio at the training, and I think I have it right now, I think, that you said people will only hear your message to the extent that they perceive you have listened to what they have to say.
Right.
Is that right?
Exactly.
I always try and remember that and put a sock in my mouth.
Right, and listen to them, or at least they think you're listening to them.
but at the same time, state it's vegan, right? So there, it's out there, kind of like, you know, your thing of saying, you know, the reason I went vegan is I found out it's not necessary, it's not in my best interest, and everything's fine, it's fantastic. You know, something short to give them, and then if they're interested, they can jump on board. And,
right.
You know.
Right.
Coming from them, not being me, pushy vegan.
Exactly, yeah. There's one other person who's raised her hand. I'll go ahead. This is Nancy. Okay, Nancy, hello. You there? I think I just unmuted your phone.
Hello?
Oh, there we
Hello?
Go. Yeah, hi, Nancy. Yes, I can hear you.
Yeah, I unmuted this call, but I forgot to unmute my phone.
Right.
Yeah, I really loved hearing all this. It's great, and you were talking about fun, and I think I might have mentioned it last time, but I'm organizing a vegan burger smackdown.
Oh, right.
In
I love
Baltimore.
The name. Yeah.
And the whole idea is to really associate vegan food with fun and enjoyment, and it's going to be very lighthearted. And we've got a bunch of volunteers, and it looks very promising, some really great restaurants and chefs, six different burgers. And I think it's so important to have that association with vegan food and veganism and just, you know, the joy of living that life instead of all the long list of no's, you know. Sometimes I think it's presented, you know, especially as animal rights activists are constantly, you know, how horrible everything is. I mean, it is horrible, and it's true. People need to know that. But without that positive vision of the future, people aren't going to do it or aren't going to stick with it, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So,
I think all those no's, you can't eat this, you can't eat that, you can't eat that. And what you're doing is you're saying, you can eat this, you can eat this, you can eat this, you can even have
this. Yeah, now there will be the Impossible Burger there. But then there's another woman who makes from scratch a burger from seitan, which is wheat gluten, and she does a really good job. And then the rest are made from Whole Foods.
Right.
You know, from scratch,
great.
From Whole Foods,
yeah,
and they're going to be very healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got a garbanzo bean burger. We've got a quinoa-based burger. And you can see, you can go to veganburgersmackdown.com and see everything that's going on. And
what community is it in?
Oh, I'm sorry, it's in Baltimore.
Oh, okay. Wow.
It's
wonderful.
In Baltimore. Yeah,
that's
so
great.
So it's occurred to me after 4 3/4 years of being vegan and really just every day wanting to, you know, talking about it, trying to spread the message and talk about the, you know, because the horrors kind of woke me up, but I've realized that what motivates people, and as we go into mainstream, it's going to be a different kind of people. You know, when you
right.
go into the mainstream
exactly.
population,
yes.
there's different motivations and different
mm-hmm.
influences and different barriers. You know, so I have a background in health education, so I'm always looking at, well, what's the barrier to change? Whether it's right or wrong or people should or shouldn't be that way is actually irrelevant. If
uh-huh.
the barrier is there, we have to be able to address it.
Yes.
So, you know,
wow.
without judgment. I saw a really great poster meme online, and it was a guy, like a big body poster board. And it said, non-judgment day is approaching. non-judgment day, yeah. And I
well,
thought it would be cool to put, like, vegan under that, you know.
Yeah.
Right, right. Great.
So that's
I
all I wanted
I recommend,
to say.
Yeah, I recommend people go to your website. I just put that in, and it came up, and it's a beautiful. I mean, very. These burgers are like amazing. They're huge. And,
I know.
Delectable looking, and you have a magician and singers and DJs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it looks like a big party.
Yeah, I'm joking that I want people to forget they're eating vegan food.
Right.
I want to think about it. You know, just enjoy what you're eating. Not really, obviously, but. You know, and I was
mm-hmm.
wondering about using the word vegan because it's still there's a stigma, but I realized, you know what, that's actually all the more reason to use it, to not shy
yeah.
away from it,
yeah.
not back down,
yeah.
you know.
Right. I think it's
so
true.
Anyway,
the stigma is lifting.
And if anybody
yeah.
goes there and you have any suggestions, please feel free to contact me with any suggestions
okay.
at all. And it's going to be eco-friendly.
Yeah.
All of the food service is going to be compostable.
Mm, great. Great, Nancy. Well, that's
a
great connection. All right. Oh, that's so interesting. Yeah, so, all right. So, let's see here. Where are we? So, all right. Well, thanks so much, Patricia. We've had you on here quite a while, so I want to. I really appreciate you taking some time
My
with
pleasure.
Us. My pleasure. And sharing your, you know, the four years now. And, yeah, I like the idea, you know, just getting together and creating a space for people to learn and to grow and to learn from each other. I think that's a lot of it. It's like grassroots
yes.
Self-education, which is really
right.
the foundation of our movement. It's grassroots self-education,
mm-hmm.
teaching each other. We don't need, you know, there are experts that can be helpful, but we're really the experts. We're the ones who understand our own health, our minds, our communities, and this is really the way change happens. It happens at the grassroots, and that's really what you're exemplifying. So neat. It would be neat maybe if you, it's really not, it's just not even a suggestion, it's just a thought that comes into my head, but some kind of a little, if you had a little project that you did maybe once a year that brought it to even a bigger community, you know, a festival or a little something.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe you don't want to do that because then you'd have a project to work on. You just want to create a space. So, but anyway, whatever. But I just think it's so great, you know, what you're doing. I want
thank
to thank you.
You
for sharing it. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, all our best to Manuel, and we'll talk to you again.
Okay, wonderful.
Care.
Thanks. Bye, everyone.
Thanks. Okay.
Bye.
Yeah, bye-bye. All right. So let's see here. I've got to mute her phone. All right. So, again, gosh, we have a little bit of time left here on the call, another maybe 25 minutes, and so if any of you have anything you'd like to share, or question, or comment, or concern, please press *6 so I can unmute your phone. I'm happy, absolutely happy, delighted to do that. And in the meantime, there's a couple of things I wanted to talk about. Also, that were sort of on my heart and mind, and one of them. I mean, just first of all, just to mention that on the resources that I sent to everybody, I put up on the internet, and you can all look at them for the World Peace Diet Circle for April of 2019. I just love the quote. I want to share that briefly by John Muir. You know, John Muir is a really tremendous inspiration for anybody who wants inspiration for veganism, as well as, of course, environmental. Sanity and concern, but this look at this. Look what he says. Surely a better time must be drawing nigh when God-like beings will become truly humane and learn to put their animal fellow mortals in their hearts instead of on their backs or in their stomachs. I mean, I just love how he calls animals fellow mortals. You know, there's a guy named Lee Stetson, who's an actor, who does a one-man play on John Muir's life, and I've seen it twice. He does it in Yosemite Village the whole summer, and then I've seen him do it in Berkeley, I think once, and I've seen him do it somewhere else, maybe San Francisco once. And he just basically gets up on the stage and he acts out. He's memorized a lot of John Muir's writings, and John Muir calls animals fellow mortals, and you know, emphasizing fellow, that we're fellow mortals. We're all mortals, right? We're all fellows. We're neighbors. We're neighbors. We're kindred spirits. We're fellow mortals on this earth. And that should create within us a yearning to respect each other. And he has such a deep respect for animals. He spent a lot of time watching them and learning about them and being with them in nature back, you know, 150 years ago, whenever it was, when there was the environment wasn't nearly so destroyed. And he tried single-handedly to save Hetch Hetchy Valley and many other things in California, but in front of the Sierra Club. But really, in many ways, inspired the whole national park system. Went with Teddy Roosevelt to go with him up into the Sierras and told him about this idea he had. So he's an enormous, and it's so great how he makes fun of people, how everybody wants to eat food that's rich and has meat in it, and he talks about dairy. Nobody will eat anything unless they put the whole dish under the udders of a cow. So you know, he was writing way back, 100 years before, or maybe at least 50 years before Donald Watson and veganism. But he was, very close to being a vegan himself. When he talks about animals and not putting them on our backs, in other words, not wearing their skins, not putting them in our stomachs, and not eating them. You know, this is not eating dairy. You know, he really made those connections, and it came, I think, in a very deep, intuitive way through his love for the mountains, the beautiful Sierras, and his connection with nature and with the animals. And it went deep, into his heart. And I think out of his heart, so many beautiful things have come forth. And I think we can all be heirs, in a sense, to John Muir and his vision of a world of joy and harmony with nature. And he was somebody who really saw nature as bountiful and abundant and benevolent. You know, he I remember that you probably read that famous, or maybe you haven't, but there's a famous essay he wrote when it was this terrible storm. He was high in the Sierras. There was this terrible storm that was just raining and windy, and and what did he do? He climbed a tree. He wanted to experience the full majesty of the storm, and he climbed high, high, high up into the tree, and he wrote about how people say that trees don't move. He said, when you're up high in a tree in a storm, man, that tree moves. It moves. It covers a lot of territory, swaying back and forth. And he just became so ecstatically connected to the tree and to the wind and to the stars and the sky and the earth and the moon and everything. And that spirit of adventure, I think, is so precious. You know, I think that's really underlying the vegan movement, is this spirit of adventure, that we're not just going to accept the same old story, the narrative of routine abuse. You know, we see life as an adventure. We have self-respect. We respect ourselves and our lives. And so that we respect the lives of others, of human beings, of animals, of ecosystems. And so I really see John Muir as one of the bright, sort of the forgotten bright lights of the vegan movement. In many ways, the environmental movement, the animal rights movement, the movement for sustainability on every level. And he was blind in one eye from an accident when he was just a kid, but that didn't stop him. You know, he just went out and just would walk and live close to the earth. There's the great poem by Walt Whitman. He says, "Now I know the secret to the making of the finest persons. It is to eat and sleep with the earth." And I think there's something so true about that, you know, just to get some time in nature and to appreciate the beauty of this earth and the animals and getting to see them and spend some time with them a little bit. You know, it's really a wonderful opportunity. Madeline and I took some time on Sunday to do something I've thought about doing for quite a while, and we finally did it. We have a stream here. It's the only stream in the area. It's called Puta Creek, P-U-T-A-H. And, you know, I did a lot of canoeing and kayaking in my younger years, and we still have a wonderful vessel. It's an inflatable two-person kayak. So we can put it, it's always in the back of our pickup truck wherever we go. There it is. And we can pump it up and get on any body of water, on the ocean, on a lake, on a stream, on a river. And it's capable of really intense white water. It's self-bailing. You know, I first learned about these when I was in, Metal and I were in Alaska, and I went down Class 3 Rapids in one of these things, and I was like, wow, this is amazing. So we have one. And so we went down Puta Creek, and it's a river that no one goes down. No one does it. I mean, most of the year you can't do it because there's not enough water. But this time of year, if you just time it right, and I think we timed it just about perfectly, there's not too much water that it's really treacherous, but there's enough that you can just go. But I was expecting it to be, because it goes through, you know, the valleys, and it's quite a ways. I'm not sure, probably 7, 8, 9 miles, something like that, from Middletown to Hidden Valley where we live. And once you get in, you really can't get out because it goes through very remote wilderness. So we just had to, you know, once we started, we couldn't get out. You have to keep going. And we never know what's around the next corner. That's the thing, what's around the next bend. And what was around the next bend always was really difficult rapids to run because not only was there a lot of white water and rocks and all of that, but also there's a lot of trees, you know, willow trees and other trees that grow, since it's a kind of more of a seasonal river, they grow right in the river, you know. So you going down the river, and then you've got these trees you got to deal with that you have to go under or around or somehow not get scratched or hung up or whatever. Anyway, we managed and had a really a wonderful time, and had to have our wits about us absolutely constantly because it was definitely a beautiful nature experience and challenging. But there was also some wonderful wildlife too. Especially, I loved seeing these two otters. At one point, they were just playing in the water, and it's like this is their home, you know. Besides all of the water birds, you know, so many wonderful water birds, lots of different types of ducks, and red-winged blackbirds and geese and Canadian geese and other birds, swallows and things. And we saw some other animals too. Madeline saw a fox, which was nice. So, but anyway, it's wonderful to be out in the wilderness and to see the beings where they are and to realize that the earth is for them too. And by the way, if you have a chance, I don't know if you have the capability, but we just found out not too long ago about this series that they're airing on Netflix. So we decided to start watching it. It's called, Our Planet, I believe. It's narrated, it's all hosted by David Attenborough, you know, the famous naturalist. And it's 8 really beautifully done, hour-long, roughly, I think, 50-minute-long sessions. We've seen 3 of them. But to really get an appreciation of how these animals are celebrating their lives. You know, we saw the one on the Arctic. It was the second one. The third one was on the jungles. And to see how these birds, for example, the elaborate dances that they have for courting each other, and how significant. I mean, it must be so significant to them to be doing this, right? I mean, this male, he won't do his dance until he's cleaned up every single little leaf and twig in the space where he's going to give his dance to impress the female, you know, and how she watches every little move, and how he does these super amazing acrobatic feats to impress her. And, you know, to see all these different displays and wherever, and the one, you know, and fish and polar bears and so forth, it's just really broadened. I think it helped broaden our appreciation and our understanding of nature. There's a saying by Thich Nhat Hanh, which is so important. He says, we cannot love what we don't understand. I would say we cannot understand what we don't love, really. We can't understand what we don't love. And that's the big problem with science. You know, it's based on trying to understand nature, understand animals, understand ecosystems from this sort of reductionist perspective of animal agriculture injects into all of us, where we stand back like an impartial observer and try to understand something, try to understand it. You can't understand it if we don't love it. We never understand anything if we don't love what we're trying to understand. That's the great predicament that human beings are in today, is that we're raised in an educational system that teaches us not to love, essentially, and that we can attain understanding. So our understanding is not understanding. Our understanding is delusion, for the most part, 99%. I mean, 100% is delusion if it doesn't have love. So so connecting, loving animals, loving the earth, loving our lives, I think this is really the key to our being able to be successful in understanding how we should be living, understanding nature and animal agriculture. As I'm in my talks lately, I've been realizing it more and more clearly, is really demonic, in the sense that it's based always on excluding and eliminating love, eliminating kindness and caring, and eliminating the deep feminine awareness of the interconnectedness of compassion and kindness and of caring, essentially. So anyway, John Muir is such a beautiful example of someone just living that life, and I'm so grateful that Madeline puts up with me and is willing to go on these hair-raising adventures where we survive somehow. but anyway, we had a good time. So connecting with nature, I wanted to mention that. And just to go through the resources, there's an unusually large number of interviews that are on video with me, or audio. So if you have a chance to listen to them or watch them, that Live Vegan podcast was really good. These two young guys from Canada, they're great. One was a former undercover investigator, so he went in, you know, and they asked really good questions. I was kind of amazed at how deep probing their questions were, so that I kind of recommend listening to if you have a chance. And then I made 2 10-minute videos that are just instructional videos, and I put them also in the World Peace Diet. I've put them specially just for us in the resources when you register for the World Peace Diet training. And if you've registered once, you always have access to it. But anyway, they're in there. One is the 10-minute video on how all 5 dimensions of health are harmed by animal agriculture. So that's just basically, a good overview of our physical health, environmental health, cultural health, psychological health, and spiritual health, and how animal agriculture attacks and erodes all 5 dimensions of our health. And then there's a 10-minute video on herderism and veganism, and how, basically chapter 2 in the World Peace Diet. So it's got, both of these have graphics to illustrate what I'm talking about, how herderism led to reduction of animals and to the rise of a wealthy elite class, to capitalism and war and slavery and domination of women, and the male role model of a hard, tough, disconnected male and the patriarchal, warlike society that we're in being historically connected. So we have those two. Feel free to share those with people. Of course, there's links to them on YouTube, but they're also in our private facilitator training website as well. And then they made a video of my talk on vegan spirituality in Los Angeles, which was just a recent, these are all very recent, was a couple of weeks ago. And then I was also interviewed by Karen Hartglass. Some of you remember Karen Hartglass. She was the chief executive of EarthSave for a while, and she lives in New York City. And she has something called Responsible Eating and Living. And so the new book, which I'm the editor of, Buddhism and Veganism, we had a discussion of that. And that book is doing really well, and I think it's definitely fills a niche that's missing, you know, the connection between veganism and Asian philosophy, Buddhism especially, yoga, and how they're connected. So if you're interested, get a copy of that book, because I think it helps us understand veganism at a deeper level, and also how veganism has something to offer Buddhism, and how Buddhism has something to offer veganism. I think that's an important point, that veganism doesn't really of itself have any mindfulness or awareness practices, and I think Buddhism can really help deepen our veganism, as well as veganism, of course, can help deepen Buddhism. If you're a Buddhist and aren't vegan, they're not going to get too far. There's also a very short video I did for Golden Rule Day. It was really great that the people who sponsor, who create this Golden Rule Day, agreed that people who are vegans should make videos that urge people to expand the concept of Golden Rule to include animals. So I was invited to make a video, and it was difficult. We were somewhere on the traveling in Texas or something, but I was able to do it. So it's there, and also I gave a lecture recently at the Center for Spiritual Living in Santa Rosa, which is a big place, you know, on vegan, on the World Peace Diet. So there's a video of that. And also just be aware that there's a new thing just starting up, the Vegan Broadcasting Network. And if any of you would like to have a radio show, like if any of you would like to just have a weekly radio show for free, there's no charge. There's a vegan guy named Philip Steck and his wife, who are based in the mountains of California, they just want to do this. And so they're going to be reading, they love the World Peace Diet, so they're going to be reading me, you know, reading the World Peace Diet, the audiobook. They're going to be airing it starting on Monday, April 22nd. He wanted me to mention to you and to anyone you know, you can mention to anyone you know, to please, if you want to expand your reach, this is something that it's a startup, so it's just getting off the ground. But if you want to have a free vegan radio show on a weekly basis or however you'd like to do it, you can go to that link of gbnradio.com. Also, Ina Ferguson, who, as you all know, is a World Peace Diet facilitator and World Peace Yoga founder, she has a great interview, I think, on vegan spirituality. You can check out. And then the rest of it is some of the different things. Victoria Moran has she's a really good ally. And she has everyone who goes through her Main Street Vegan Academy read the World Peace Diet, which I think is wonderful. And she's doing a lot of, just always doing good things. And she's got she's involved like I am also, but she's more involved with this new film by Thomas Jackson called A Prayer for Compassion. So if you want to do something in your community, host a screening of this film, A Prayer for Compassion. It's got a great message for people of faith of any kind, any people of, you know, in any kind of religious communities, and making the connection between religion and veganism. I think it does it in a very, very holistic, and it's easy to watch. Nobody gets offended. My sister and her husband and my mother, who are fundamentalist Christians, watched it, and they really liked it a lot. You know, it has people of all the religions, fundamentalist Christians, as well as, you know, a lot of other people, Jews and Buddhists and yoga, Hindu, Jain, everybody. So anyway, she's somewhat involved with that film too, and they had just recently we had a premiere of that film in New York City a couple of weeks ago. And then this Martha Beck video is very interesting. Have a look at that. I love this one on lentils. Lentils, you know, you think about it. I mean, if we would, instead of people eating meat and dairy, if we just use that land to grow lentils, and we could feed everybody on this planet, like I say, on a fraction of the land. Lentils are a miracle food. They're easy to grow. I mean, they're hardy, and the enormous amount of fiber, protein, carbohydrates. They're delicious. There's all kinds of ways we can grow them and fix them and prepare them. And so just to think about it, lentils and chickpeas and beans and are such an amazing. They actually enrich the soil. I mean, it's just so fantastic to realize that we have such an abundant planet. We could easily feed everyone on a fraction of the land, as we keep saying. I like this from the New Republic: why animal rights is the next frontier for the left. You know, that's an important point. And this other thing is a big story. The dairy farmers are getting desperate economically. I mean, the dairy industry is collapsing, and our government is continuing to buy huge amounts of dairy just to support them. But it's, even with that, it's not enough. And the whole thing is so corrupt. So, someone last time was asking about the devastating impact of animal agriculture on the workers, and so this Oxfam America article, the high human cost of chicken, the worker cost of chicken, the devastating impact of slaughterhouses on the workers, and so forth. So there's quite a few articles. If you just Google that online, you can find as many different things. And then finally, the very last thing, this excellent video, actually made by Joanne Farb, who's a good friend of our, her daughter, Serena. I remember Serena when she was like only, 8 years old. Now she's making videos. She's in college. I think she's just graduated from college. And she has a great video on the downsides of clean meat. This is something, this whole clean meat thing is really growing, I think, the controversy about clean meat, and people are wondering, people ask me, that's one of the most common questions I get when I give a lecture. The most common questions are, what do I feed my dogs and cats, which I always say, but especially, how important it is for them to be vegan, dogs and cats, and also, what do you think of clean meat? And I typically say, well, I don't have a strong opinion either way. I'm not really that in favor of it because it's not really a vegan product. I mean, it's the flesh of animals. It's somehow being created in a laboratory. People are still going to be eating flesh. But on the other hand, if it saves a lot of the animals' lives and saves ecosystems and forests and oceans, and maybe it's a good thing. But more and more, I have to say, I'm being swayed as I look into the research and I watch the debate. You can really watch, I recommend seeing the recent debate in Berkeley between the clean meat proponents, Bruce Friedrich, and the woman who's the president of Mercy for Animals on the one side, and then on the other side, John Sabanmatsu, who's a philosophy professor, and Vasily, I can't remember his last name, who's also a philosophy professor. They did a really good job, from my point of view, of debunking the clean meat thing as a hoax, as really pretty much a hoax that's basically something. It's like a Trojan horse in the vegan movement. I think it's the idea primarily of the meat, dairy, and egg industries, or the meat industry, especially in the pharmaceutical industry. I mean, it'll keep people sick, right? I mean, people eating this stuff, it's saturated fat and cholesterol and animal protein. I mean, people are going to still have diabetes and osteoporosis, and they're not going to get healthy. So the pharmaceutical industry loves it. And it keeps the idea alive that we need to eat meat, that meat is somehow something, animal flesh is something desirable to eat. And so these are huge problems, plus there's many other problems. There's many, many other problems with how it's sourced, the environmental impacts, and the basic fact we already have right now, we have plant-based meats, basically, that are literally indistinguishable. I mean, people cannot, they don't even know. Different Beyond Burgers and so forth. So why the heck do we need that, right? I mean, why are we promoting animal flesh? Why don't we stick with the message, the vegan message? So I'm very, very now, very, very suspicious. I think it is a hoax, actually. It's a way for the animal agriculture industry to deepen its tentacles, to diversify, to increase its profits. It's very similar, I think, to the whole Happy Meat. It's very similar, and it's the same people. I mean, I have to say, it's the same people, the animal welfare people that say, yeah, well, it doesn't matter as long as it's not factory farmed, as long as if it's free range and grass fed, then it's fine. You go for it, and the animals are better treated, and it's not so bad, you know. And you know what that did? That's basically really increased the profits and devastated. It's really harmed our movement. So I think this is similar. So I think we have to really be careful about this. So I don't want to say anything more about that. I wanted to just close. I wanted to say that our dear friends Beth Redwood and Daniel Redwood have created a new song, which is really lovely. It's a wonderful song. And there's a new, let's see if I have it here. I'm just trying to get to the word. I thought I had the words. All right. So I'm going to play it here. The words are beautiful. The words of the song are written by Beth, and it's called Vegan Heart, Song for the World's Soul. And I'll just play it. We can go out on this maybe. It's a beautiful song, and maybe... if possible, I feel like we've kind of run out of time here. There's so much we had to say, but maybe we can have Beth and or Daniel maybe next month talk a little bit about the song. Daniel is a wonderful guitarist and singer, and has an album, a terrific album of original songs. They're all promoting veganism, every single song. And Lily is a graphic artist. She creates the covers and of the CD, and she's also a poet and writes a lot of the words. So the words are very touching. The chorus is all life belongs. The chorus is there's bounty in the harvest, beauty in the land. Embrace it with your vegan heart and come to understand. And the words are beautiful. I'll go ahead and we'll close with this. I'll put it on now. And I'll just, you know, thank all of you for joining us. Thank you, Beth and Daniel, for creating this beautiful song. This is what we were talking about earlier, the importance of creativity and helping to spread the message and beauty and reminding people of the and terrible consequences of animal agriculture and of the beautiful possibilities when we move toward a plant-based way of eating for ethical reasons. So let's look forward to next month in May, the third Sunday in May is May 16th. And so we'll see you then. The very next day, on the 17th, I'll be flying to Cincinnati for the Cincinnati Veg Fest with Mark Stroud and Anna Ferguson. And that's great. We talked to them last week about that. So, okay, here we go. This is the song, and we'll look forward to seeing you, and I'll be sending out the a link to some of the things we talked about tonight on the call. So let me just cue this up. Much love to you all. Thanks again for the many efforts that you're making, and thanks again to Beth and Daniel for this song that we're going to be hearing now, Vegan Heart. Here we go.
Their buzzing, the forests are no more, wildlife has gone extinct, the lions cease to roar, as air becomes unbreathable, death claims the ocean floor, and we live upon a wasteland, struggling to
Coming days unfold, as the coming